नमोऽथ भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमोऽथ भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमोऽथ भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स Well, first of all, just very nice to be gathered from various parts of the continent. And somebody mentioned earlier about, how meaningful it is, how as one practices, what matters to us starts to change, and the way we want to use our time starts changing, and we don't want to do the things we used to do, the sort of fun things that people do and aren't fun anymore, can be like that. And we can find ourselves, maybe questioning is there something wrong with me that I'm not into those things that I used to be into that seems like everybody else is into. So that's why it's very important that we can gather like this, as practitioners who, want to spend time in silence together and in sharing Dhamma and listening to Dhamma together. And it's I guess, as human beings, we're sort of tribal in some way. It's hard for that to shift. And so there's a sort of a Dhamma tribe that brings us together. And it's not just about an identity of who we are, but it's also a shared understanding and also some shared rituals that have meaning. And this is really, it's kind of deep in the human psyche, I think, to be part of something like that. And I'm sure there are people who think that they're not, but they might find that, even if there's like no spiritual inclination or whatever, but there's probably a shared interest in technology or in whatever it is that binds them or bonds them with others. So the thing that brings us together today is a love of the Dhamma. And the Dhamma is, not just the Dhamma as a specific teaching, but also that in our hearts, that wishes to wake up, that seeks freedom, that wants to align with truth. So it's such a precious thing. And there's the heart that is drawn to awakening. And that can be very powerful, can be very sustained over long periods of time, I want to think of it as terrain, over all kinds of terrain. Over mountains and through sweet meadows and through swamps and wildfires and great and complex cities and open plains. The spiritual path can be like that. We go through so many different terrains of the mind and of life, because life is generous in presenting us opportunities, So there's that there's the experience of the path, and if there is that overarching wish or perhaps it's a thread that goes through your life that is just drawing you, that doesn't let you just turn away from the spiritual path, the path of awakening, but it draws you. Even if it's not comfortable and you wish it was different, and if only people could, be da 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 this way or that way, it would be so much easier. But it draws us through all of the varied terrain of life. And If we're attuned to that calling, it has great strength. There's great strength there and stability. It's kind of unperturbed by whatever life presents. That heart that wishes to awaken, it just doesn't give up. And I've certainly had a few times in my life where I've thought, that's it now, it's too much. I'm done. I can't get up from this one. I'm flawed, it's just too much. And then each time, after a little while, there's this energy that arises in the heart that's like, nope, we're not done yet, You can't give up that easy. And so, you can't, that has its own nature. You can't push that away. Or if you do, you can actually, but it would make you unwell to do that. So that heart's wish to awaken. And then there's the head and the head's idea of what that might look like, which isn't necessarily so attuned to the heart. So the head might be saying, you must be joking. You've been meditating for years and you're a hopeless case. Come on, who are you kidding? Just give up, Just go and switch the TV on and forget about it. You haven't got a hope. I don't know if your head does that, but the head can do that. The thoughts, they want to undermine the faith and the wisdom and the courage, really, that the heart may hold. So there can be these different stories going on, sometimes simultaneously. And when we're paying attention to the head and what it's saying, we can feel a little shaky sometimes. But if you can really attune to your heart, that has got you this far, has led you to this moment. So if you really attune to your heart, you might find maybe it's interesting actually, as I do that right now, the word stability came up, but when I look at my heart, it doesn't feel actually very stable. It feels a little tremory. It's not like super stable, but there is a deeper stability there that isn't put off by the changing conditions of life. That knows that changing conditions are the nature of life and of this world, and that there is a truth that is stable and peaceful and present that is accessible. So there are times when it's hard to access. When we're very caught up in the mind, and maybe our body's also, tight and fearful or resistant or just sick, struggling or exhausted. So it can be that we lose the immediacy of this potential for clarity and peace, but it is always here. When I first stumbled across the Buddha's teaching, the Four Noble Truths, I didn't really understand them. I mean, I understood the first one, there is suffering. I got that. I was quite well schooled in that one. I didn't really understand the cause and the cessation of suffering. But I didn't exactly understand the Noble Eightfold Path either, really. But I kind of understood that the Buddha was pointing to presence. Not just presence, it's much more than that, but he was pointing to the place of peace, the place of safety, the place of security that he speaks about as being found here and now. And I could also see that, it was hard to find it because there was all of this clutter, clutter of my mind, habits, bad habits, and thoughts and beliefs that were just cluttering it up. So to be in the present was not a very nice experience, or it was not very easy either to find that place of presence. But there was a sort of deep recognition that that was what the Buddha was pointing to, that it's here and now, the place of safety, security that he speaks about, the refuge is here and now. So, part of the work is to clear out this heart and mind of the obstructions, of the obstructive habits, to recognize, to get to know, what are the patterns of this particular one? Where are the fears and the desires and the confusions that arise, and how do they pull us and push us around? So it's an important part of the path to get to know that. It's not like we're supposed to sort of suddenly become a perfect person and be all pure and radiant and perfect. But we're getting to know what gets in the way of the mind just opening to, in a peaceful way, to things as they are. So it generally comes down to wanting and not wanting, simply put. And wanting and not wanting have so many ways that they can show up. Be very subtle, be very gross, be everything in between. And it can be about, getting something nice, a nice car, a nice meal, a nice house, whatever it may be. And it can also be about getting that meditation state I want, or getting some level of insight that I want. And this is tricky. It gets more tricky when it's around those things, because we do want to see through the illusions. We do want to gain insight. We do want to, at least I do, want to wake up, fully, whenever the time is right. So there's a wish for that and a desire for that. But it's not a desire. Most desires are about getting something. And the desire for freedom is about letting go. It's about letting go of the things that are in the way of that freedom, letting go of the things that are held on to, the resentments, the fears, the yearnings, the distractions, the self-talk, how we create ourselves in the mind through stories. So this desire to awaken is not about getting something. We don't actually get anything extra, but we little by little let go of what is in the way. So when I was on the retreat, I mentioned a simile that the Buddha gave of a piece of cloth. So sometimes you hear people saying, well, we're already enlightened. We're already enlightened. There's no problem. We just have to just recognize that we're enlightened already. And this is, this is taking a truth and somewhat misunderstanding it. So there's a simile that points to this. And it's about it's about having a cloth, and this cloth has got dirty. stained and dirty, and it's been used, it's been kind of knocking around a while. And there's this cloth, which is like us and oneself. And then we can see, oh, if I were to clean that cloth, there I could have a clean piece of cloth. It would be a beautiful, clean piece of cloth. So there within the dirty piece of cloth is a clean piece of cloth. But you can't say, you can't hold up a dirty cloth and say this is clean, because it's not. The potential is there, but it hasn't been realized yet. So you take that cloth and you get some water and you scrub it and you rush, rub it under the water, and you get out the sort of worst of the dirt, the big pieces and the mud and stuff. But it's still stained, it's still dirty, still not, it's not pure yet, it's not clean yet. And then you can see, okay, it's better than it was, but it still needs a bit of work. And so you get some soap and you give it a good scrub and rub and rinse and scrub it a bit more and a bit more, and then you get the stains out, and it's looking pretty good after quite a bit of work. But it still smells of the soap powder. It's not quite in its natural state yet. And so you leave it outside for a while in the sun. And you, I think it's actually in the sutta, you put it in a box with a with something that smells good, and that takes away the smell of the soap powder, and then you leave it in the sun. And in the end, you have this beautiful piece of clean cloth that is kind of similar to how it was when it was first made. So all of that stuff's been with lots of work has been cleaned out. So this is a simile for the mind, that the or the yeah, the heart, that it's, it gets its natural state is clean and pure, and in that state it can be used for many things. It's very useful and beneficial. And then it gets stained with, generally kind of wanting and not wanting, greed and aversion, and how the ways that we follow that, the things that we do. And then our sense of maybe self-respect gets lower, and then we kind of get dragged through the mud a bit, and we don't really care that much, and it gets dirtier and dirtier, and then we're with this, we've got this kind of rough old bit of cloth. It's not looking too beautiful, and it's not that useful, and we don't really want to throw it away because it's potentially it's got something good in there. So this process of cleaning, getting the worst of it off first. I think think of the precepts, actually, the five precepts is the way you're going to get the worst of it off. The mud, the shape, how you can take a piece of cloth that's dirty and rub it, and then the worst, bits start to fall off. I think the precepts are a bit like that. You're just going to clean it up a bit, but it still needs quite a bit of work. And the work is, it is a purification of the mind, and it's a funny word. Purification. I'm not sure how useful it is actually in English, but it is because it can bring up a sense of like trying to be a pure person, a pure and good person who should never do wrong. But it's more about recognizing how, recognizing the results of our actions through body, speech, and mind. And through recognizing the results of our actions, making choices about how we respond to life. And our meditation practice gives us more space within which we can see. It gives us a sort of a bit more space. So we're not just caught into things and reacting, but we can see. We maybe feel the reaction, and then but we don't actually react. And then we feel that for a minute. We think through what would be the result of acting on this. No, I don't want to do that. And then we hold that feeling for a while. We take care of that feeling until it passes. And then we've avoided creating some complicated scenario. And then maybe then we start to look at, oh, why did I respond like that? And that person had the same situation, they responded differently. I've always found that interesting living in community, how differently people respond to similar things. So then you can start to see, oh, what is it in here that makes me feel that makes me want to do that? And then sometimes we might find, oh, there's a story from way back when such and such a thing happened. And that's created a sense of me and of reality and of certainty and the world from this one scenario that happened. And then it didn't happen to my friend, and they don't have that response. So when we sort of find that, we can start to go back and undo the patterning through many, there are many skillful means now actually to do that. We can start to undo the patterning. And in undoing the patterning, there's a greater sense of well-being, freedom, and happiness. It's a little bit simplistic, but it kind of is like that. So the work is to not be afraid of what we have to face and undo, and to keep remembering that clean cloth, which is the natural state of the mind, and also the one that's willing to do the laundry. That part of us that's actually willing to do the work. And to appreciate that, to appreciate ourselves in that way. And as we do that, we can also encourage others. We don't have to actively encourage them, but it can just be encouraging to other people to see how we transform and grow and change, and how there's, greater peace, well-being that comes from that. And also greater joy and generosity and sense of interconnectedness with each other, with other people, and with nature. It's also a natural evolution of the path. So we always need to start where we are, which can be different, at any moment. And meet our experience and learn from our experience and recognize our potential. Not in a craving, not as like, oh, I just want to be enlightened, now. But more, what is in the way right now? Is there a habitual story of negativity going on in the background that's stopping me from seeing things as they are? Is there a constant jumping out and wanting to enjoy this and taste that and have a bit more of the other that's stopping me from really seeing clearly right now? Or is there just a general sort of delusion? Delusion can be very pleasant. It can be nice to just, dwell in fantasies and avoid noticing the difficult stuff. But delusion is like a false pleasure. It's like, I think it's a bit like painting the walls of the prison, with clouds and sky. But we can actually step outside, experience it directly. So I just want to offer that tonight as an encouragement, and I'll end there. And I'd like to open up the room, our space together for any questions or comments sharing.